All right. We'll run through our show in our show. What is it? What do we do? Show prep. God, I can't even. This is what it's like. This is it. It takes Nate. Nate has been doing the bulk of the editing, and my God, he makes it sound like I can construct sentences.
That's good. We all know that's not true, but
yes, anybody who's actually spoken to me knows it's not true.
Jason Alt.
So now we do a sound check. Make sure the expected microphone is working. I'm going to rub my microphone like it's a lover. Yes.
Check, 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 check.
Whoa.
That was loud. You get that? Is my mic working?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is.
Jason Alt.
Found a random piece of metal just now. I like shiny things.
Jason Alt.
Sounds good. He should beg for a new mic as long as he's begging for stuff.
Yeah, my mic cable might freak out.
All right.
Yeah. Do you want to beg for stuff, Nate?
No, I'm cool.
All right.
It's fun.
Please.
Gimme.
I'm Phil DeLuca.
I'm Nate Burgess.
And Sean.
And there's this other guy named Sean, too. He'll be here later.
He'll be here later. And we are Commander In. Theme song. It's an exciting theme song. Thanks for listening. Thanks for listening, everybody. We focus on topics the community wants to hear about and talk to interesting people along the way, but never, ever talk about three banned topics: religion, politics, and Hearthstone. As always, you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Reddit, iTunes, and mtgcast.com, and now Podbay FM. By searching for Commander in MTG Podcast. This week, we have an awesome show lined up for you. We're going to shine a spotlight on value white cards and the larger MTG Finance, that's hashtag MTG Finance scene. And for that, we've brought on a very special guest. Our first repeater. We erroneously called him our first guest, but he is certainly our first repeat guest. Last on during the MTG Origins spoilers, episode 4 and 5. He's the minister of MTG Finance, even though he doesn't want the job. He's the vizier of value cards. Mr. Jason Alt.
So you warned me I was only getting two titles this time, and I was like, I'll be fine with that, but I'm not fine with it, but that's okay.
Now you feel shortchanged?
Maybe a little.
What would be the third title?
EDH Jesus. As I was called in the EDH subreddit because of the much maligned 75% deck building theory, where I basically came out and said, hey, everybody, be nice to each other, and then got crucified. That was something someone observed. That was their EDH shower thought that I said, hey, let's be nice to each other, and then was crucified. So, yeah, EDH Jesus. I thought we'd start out the episode with a little bit of sacrilege just for all our...
Oh, yeah, yeah. For our, we have a lot of right-wing Christians who listen to this show. And I have been known to invoke the name of our sweet Lord Jesus Christ once or twice. Perhaps not as he intended.
Mostly due to Sean and Nate's top decks, I bet.
Mm-hmm.
They are vicious players, yep. They are certainly vicious players. And so, EDH Jesus, Jason Alt. So before we get to our main topics, which you're, of course, the undisputed expert on, at the very least on this show, I don't know how your fellow podcasters on Brainstorm Brewery and Money Draft would feel about that. Spurlers. We've got a lot of spurlers this weekend.
These are some good ones.
Yeah, this is. Do you want to read this first one?
Yeah, okay. This is right in my wheelhouse because Two-Headed Giant is my favorite format. Like ever. Two-Headed Giant Limited. That's the best format in Magic. 2HGDH? That could be cool. I've certainly heard people that like combining their two passions in that way. But what they've done is gone and given us a mechanic that rewards us for playing Two-Headed Giant. So what we have is a blue sorcery called Crush of Tentacles that costs 4 colors and 2 blue mana. And it has an alternate cost. Its surge cost is 3 colors and 2 blue. Now, you can only play the spell for its surge cost if you or a teammate has cast another spell this turn.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what it does is it returns all non-land permanents to their owner's hands. If Crush of Tentacles' surge cost was paid, you also put an 8/8 blue octopus token onto the battlefield. It's very good.
Yeah, that's great. It's a decrease in cost, and you get a lot more for it. That really does reward teamwork. I've played a bunch of Two-Headed Giant, including Two-Headed Giant EDH, and this is going to be really easy to trigger, right? Normally, I mean, all you do is cast a creature, or your teammate casts a creature, and then bam, you get the surge cost. Do you have any use for an 8/8 blue octopus?
I wish it were a 9/9 Kraken, because we commissioned RK Post to do these awesome 9/9 Kraken tokens. And basically, like, Kiora. And then, like, that's about it. There aren't too many... And I think Reef Worm. There aren't too many ways to make a 9/9 Kraken. I wish they'd done a 9/9 Kraken. But, yeah, I could see a blue octopus really getting there. And, man, this will be real good in Mizzix, I bet. Because how hard is it to play two spells in a turn with Mizzix?
Right. Yeah, that's the thing. A lot of people missed that particular clause where it's if you or a teammate. The first couple of responses on Twitter I saw to it were just absolutely ridiculous, where they were maligning the card and casting imprecations upon all of Wizards of the Coast. But in EDH, this is going to be very easy to trigger just solo. EDH Two-Headed Giant should be very fun, too. So you've never played EDH Two-Headed Giant?
No, I've never played 2HGDH, as I like to call it.
Huh.
I don't know, I just never had the opportunity. Now, what would you do? Would you do the one copy of every card between the two decks, or would you just do it was just two decks, whatever?
The way we did it was, it was still the standard EDH rules, so each deck could have one copy of a card. We didn't have stable enough partners in the meta that I was in at the time in order to really kind of plan for that. And one time, somebody made a couple of substitutions, right, for Two-Headed Giant, and it was just devastating. You get something like Purphoros out, and Purphoros is god-awful deadly. And we did 60 life.
60? Man, with a Purphoros out, yeah. Even 60 life is not enough. That chunks you pretty good.
Yeah, it does. And every card that says each opponent... Oh, so brutal. Each opponent pays 2 life. That's, you know, doubling the damage, basically, but you've only got 1.5 times the life total. So.
Yeah, you're charring people with Deathrite Shaman. It's nasty.
Mm. Yeah, wonderful. You have high hopes for the Surge mechanic, then?
I mean, for outside EDH, obviously, but I think within EDH, I think we could really see some good stuff. The cost reduction... is going to be fine. And even if it makes your late game Soul Ring less terrible because you use it to trigger Surge cheaply.
Right.
It can even make some of your early game stuff feel less bad late in the game. Because no one wants to top deck a Bird of Paradise on turn 37 unless you're using it to cast Crusty Tentacles and get the Octopus for the same exact mana cost. So.
Yeah, and we all know that 8/8 Octopus on turn 37 is going to be quite important.
Now, I'm wondering if... I think this is really similar to something like a Phyrexian Rebirth type of card in white. I don't know if they'll do that necessarily. Or like a Martial Coup. So I'm wondering what white's going to be. If they're all going to get a Mythic Surge card, I'm excited to see what they do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering what the other colors would get. Because this is, you know, something that blue does well, which is bounce non-land permanents. Plus you get something so there's no empty board if you set it up in Surge. So, I mean, in Two-Headed Giant Limited, this card's this wins the game, essentially. Because the thing about Two-Headed Giant Limited is you get a ground stall build up very quickly. Either one team wins because the other team had its pants down, because, you know, it's usually both players get mana screwed or flooded. Like, if one player has mana problems, usually the other person can keep them alive long enough for them to be in the game, and then all of a sudden they come back and win because the one person doesn't have an empty hand. They've got nothing but gas, and they just start playing a spell every turn. But if you get both players having mana problems, then, you know, the team dies very quickly. But if the team doesn't die very quickly, you just get a huge intractable board state buildup. And something like this is like, all right, you guys can play blockers next turn, but for now, you know, we've got an 8-8 to come at you. So we're going to be leading the charge with an 8-8.
And whatever they cast is unlikely to be as big as an 8-8 octopus anyway.
Well, yeah, and certainly not in turn 5.
Yeah. Oh, it's so brutal.
This is a real feel-bad card, so, yeah.
Do you think this will see any tournament play? I mean, it's not like Storm didn't see tournament play, and this is sort of Storm-like, right?
I don't anticipate this, but I don't, control players seem really interested in trying to make this work, but I don't know. It still gives them all their land. I'm not really sure this could see tournament play, but as an EDH player, this is somewhat exciting. I don't like the sorcery speed, and it's not going to replace Cyclonic Rift, and I don't know that we need two of those cards in the deck. So it's hard to say whether I'm going to want to play this, but I'm sure anybody that's got like an octopus theme deck. I know A.E. Marling is really big on his octopus deck, so this is a shoo-in, if only for flavor.
Yeah, this goes into his Sea Monsters deck, doesn't it?
Yeah. Hey, look, another Whelming Wave. I'm good at this.
Yeah, this one's pretty sweet. I'm looking forward to playing it. It might finally get me to build a Sea Monsters deck as well. Maybe with Talrand at the helm.
There you go.
Since I have like 13 of those now.
And, you know, playing those cheap cantrips that make a Talrand deck real good, like, that's great for triggering your Surge. So, you know, it doesn't suck to play a Brainstorm into this.
Right, you're playing that Brainstorm anyway.
Just see the recent lore article where Kozilek killed Lorthos.
Yep, did see that. That was too bad. I thought Lorthos was a creature on Theros anyway, but I guess not.
They killed Mentos the Freshmaker? No!
I guess he gets around.
Not anymore.
Yeah, they did. Spoilers, everybody. Spoilers. Yes, they did. They killed him. They sliced him up. This was the good appearance of Kozilek, actually. The one with the Chandra in the Chandra story was not so great. Anyway, sorry, we went down a little Vorthos rabbit hole there. In other news, Wizards has officially spoiled the colorless mana how that's going to work. In other words, Wastes and Kozilek the Great Distortion. And I'm happy to report, even though he's not here, and maybe it's because he's not here that we'll actually say this, but Sean actually called it. He said that the simplest way to treat this was for the diamond mana, as it was known at the time, it would simply be colorless, and if it appears in a casting cost, it requires colorless, whereas the other mana that appears in little circles in the casting cost and in card text, that simply meant mana of any color, or now as they're referring to it, generic mana. So again, you know, just to make sure that everybody understands how this operates, Kozilek, the Great Distortion, has 8 generic mana, or mana of any or no color, in its casting cost. But it requires 2 colorless mana to cast. And then there's a whole bunch of different ways that if any followers of Wizards Magic or Trick MTG or Tabak Rules on Twitter already knows, there are a whole bunch of ways that this impacts the way cards are written and so forth. Are we excited about this?
Yes. They made Barry's land, and they made it not useless. Because if this made a colorless mana and nothing required the mana to come from a colorless source, this would just be a really bad forest. But it's not. It's for at least for this set, it's a very useful forest, and then all of a sudden, we can jam these in our Karn Silver Golem EDH decks. Get these with Burnished Heart, get these with Solemn Simulacrum, get these with Myriad Landscape. I'm really excited for Wastes.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I'm excited for foils.
Oh, yeah.
These are going to be $10 foils in 2 years, I think. Especially the full art ones.
Well, and so do you recommend people buy a case of Guardians of the Gate to see?
I don't know. Because you're not guaranteed one expedition every case, and some of these I don't think the Forbidden Orchard is going to be all that comparable to something like an Ancient Tomb or a Scalding Tarn. So, I really don't know. It's funny, lands like Ancient Tomb and Forbidden Orchard are good in Vintage and EDH. So, but I mean, vintage players are the ones that are going to shell out for this kind of stuff. So, as a concept, I think Expeditions are perfect because some random kid at the LGS is going to crack this in a booster pack, and all of a sudden he can go deep on a binder he's never been able to go deep on before. He could build a whole deck. Whereas some guy turns a bunch of trade bait into a card for his vintage deck, everybody wins. I think Expeditions are great. Yeah, they printed money, you know, and it's helping them sell booster packs on what might otherwise be a pretty casual and therefore kind of underwhelming sales-wise set.
Yeah.
So I think it's a win-win. I'm really excited about this.
All right. Do you, as an EDH player, do you feel sad if you pull a Forbidden Orchard over an Ancient Tomb?
If I had a deck for it, I might not care. But honestly, like, I'm just going to... Me as a non-EDH player, I'm going to sell it, so I don't really have to think about it as just an EDH player. I might be willing to trade this for a Forbidden Orchard and a pile of stuff, you know? To downgrade my Expedition if I pull it, I guess. Because anything I can trade for, like a big pile of, you know, Chromatic Lanterns or something like that, I'm fine with. The good thing about trading with non-EDH players as an EDH player is the value is subjective, right? So, you know, even if you go by prices, there's still people that are like, nah, I don't really want to get rid of that for any price. And then there's, oh, yeah, take it, you know. So EDH players have all their standard stuff as, oh, take it. And standard players have their EDH stuff as, yeah. Whatever, don't care. So, trading between those two groups, getting EDH cards from standard players and standard cards from EDH players, it's just a great way to empty someone's binder of stuff they don't care about and give them stuff they like more. And usually you'll make a few bucks on that trade, but the other person will be happier with the trade than you are. So I think that's a win-win. So really, yeah. If I pull any of these expeditions, I'm just trading them off.
Is that what you did with the Battle for Zendikar expeditions?
I sold those for cash.
Oh, wow.
And I really didn't anticipate Scalding Tarn going up from where it opened. It went down, but it went back up, which was weird. But I sold at just about the peak, so I felt good about that. Ryan Bouchard can't seem to open an expedition that isn't Misty Rainforest. He's gotten three, and I'm like, at this point, just buy another one for cash at this point. You know, sell them off as a playset, because I've never seen anybody sell a playset of a single expedition. I think that would be cool. Because you can tack 10%, 15% on eBay, you know, just for the convenience of the playset. And you might get that, so we'll see.
Wow. I'm looking at Scalding Tarn's curve here. That's pretty steep.
Yeah. It's really weird. But I mean, people are starting to think about a world without people buying as many Battle for Zendikar packs as they used to when it's no longer getting drafted as much. So I don't know. It's kind of cyclical because like there was an initial rush of all the impatient people and they bought all the copies they wanted, and then there was a bit of a lull and everyone's like, well, there are a lot of these on TCG Player. I'm not the cheapest anymore. Then there was a bit of a race to the bottom, but then people started buying them as investments. I think when they got a little cheaper, and that's what buoyed the price back up.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm lucky I pulled one Polluted Delta. But it didn't get up as high as Scalding Tarn. Interesting. I would have expected the Polluted Delta to do pretty well.
Tarn is modern has really buoyed Tarn. Plus, I think people are using the non-expedition price as a bit of a guide, and I think that's a mistake because there are two printings of Polluted Delta. Plus, there was those Judge foils that some people think are better than the expeditions. Plus, there's all kind of stuff versus the one printing on Scalding Tarn. So Scalding Tarn, yeah. All those Misty Rainforest and Scalding Tarn went up a lot. There was some buying behavior by one of the websites to kind of corner that market. And that happened a few different times, which drove the Zendikar fetches up. And then when the non-Zendikar fetches got reprinted, that drove that price way down. So using the non-expedition price as a guide is misleading, but I still think people have done that. So right now, a regular Scalding Tarn is worth more than a regular Polluted Delta for all those reasons, and I think that's misled some people. But also, Modern has really, like, there are a lot of good Modern decks that run Tarn, so that's probably what's led to that.
Yeah, this is a world I don't know a lot about because I don't follow the other formats. I'm glad people like you do so that we don't have to. But of course, we're behind the curve and we're your prey.
Well, I mean, you could see yourselves as prey, but you could also see yourselves as caring about what you care about.
That's true.
So.
No, and I was being facetious and it fell flat. I'm sorry.
No, it's... but
I know.
Yeah, but people out there are like, yeah, maybe someone might take advantage of me because I don't really know. But again, I don't know. Because I think you know the EDH stuff really well, and you know EDH prices are slower to move. So if you're picking up a big pile of stuff that's cheaper, you know, the trade could be relatively even or even in their favor right now. And they're like, haha, look what I got off this EDH player. But all of a sudden, you pick up Chromatic Lanterns at a buck, you know, 2 years ago, and now look what they did. So...
I know, it's amazing.
If you know what you like and you know what you're going to want in the future, prices will tend to follow demand. So if the cards you're most excited about as an EDH player are the ones that are going to go up in price later, the more excited you are, the more likely they are to go up. So you're not, you know, you sometimes you're just thinking long term and the other people that you're trading with are thinking short term. So I don't know. It's a tortoise versus the hare situation sometimes.
Yeah, that was, I forget which show you were on. It might have been Command Zone, I think, where you said that if you're ordering a card, right, instead of just buying one copy, assuming it, you can afford it, buy two copies, right? Because the EDH players, they know what they like, and eventually if you like that card, other people are going to like that card probably or already do, and so that price will naturally go up over time.
Yeah, that was Command Zone with Josh and Jimmy. They were talking about what advice can you give to someone who doesn't really speculate. I'm like, well, if... You know, if the card does go up, then you've got a second copy to sell off, or you don't pay more later. And either way, you know, you're in good shape. So if you're excited about those cards, chances are there's a reason you're excited. And, you know, EDH players are better than anybody else at identifying EDH staples early. Like, you look at a site like Star City Games, that's real... They're all legacy, they're standard, they're those hardcore spike formats. They pre-sold Blade of Selves for $1. So anytime you think, oh, well, people know that no magic, well, might not, you know, probably know EDH just as well as us. Just remember Star City pre-sold Blade of Selves for $1. That's all you need to know. EDH, nobody knows EDH like EDH players. And,
yeah, that's true.
And sometimes there's money in being ahead of the curve. So if you're going to order a Blade of Selves for your deck and you ordered two, all of a sudden you got an extra $11 to trade off, or you got two that you don't have to pay $10 each for. So either way, if you did that, you're going to be in great shape.
Yeah, Blade of Selves was, it was wonderful to watch it spike. Especially since I had already purchased a few copies in Japan, as we had talked about before the show.
Well, I think Star City's logic wasn't terrible. I think they saw what Masterwork of Ingenuity did. I think they thought it was going to be just another Masterwork of Ingenuity. You know, a card you can tutor for with Lahiri and Stoneforge Mystic and all that stuff, but was mostly just going to be an EDH card.
What did Masterwork of Ingenuity actually plateau at?
Like $1.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's too bad.
Blade of Selves could make it be more. You know?
Yeah, that's true. Oh, yeah, look at that. Masterwork is plummeted. I have a page full of Masterwork of Ingenuity, and maybe I made a mistake. Let's pause there because I want to talk about EDH cards that we want to earmark for, like cards you think we should buy in EDH, right, from the Commander 15 set. But let me pull Sean in because he's actually online now. So.
And I am Sean Watson. Like a consummate professional, I am always and always will be Sean Watson. Hello, listeners.
So welcome, Sean.
Hello.
We were just about to ask Jason for his picks from the Commander 2015 set. Jason, how did the Commander 2015 set kind of affect the MTG Finance landscape with the reprints of cards like Black Market and Felidar Sovereign and a couple of other gems? And then... We'll keep our listeners waiting, and ourselves waiting, for the next few minutes. We'd love to hear your top two or three picks from the set, like which ones you think are just going to bounce up in price.
Well,
Sean, we were just talking about Blade of Selves.
It's different now because all the cards that I identified early have already just gone nuts. Command Beacon seems okay at 5 as a buy, and now it's 11. Blade of Selves was obviously ridiculous at $1. So other than the new stuff, there was no price for it before, so it's just... the deck that it's in matters the most. So something, I would say that the stuff I think that has upside. What's different about this commander set is there's no obvious legacy card like there was with Turnim Nemesis or Containment Priest.
Containment Priest, yeah.
So all these decks are pretty flat. They're all selling at about the same rate, and there's, you know, what's happening is the prices are changing based on supply and demand, and basically the cards roughly total MSRP, roughly. So when the reprinted cards start to rebound a little bit, because the initial shock of the reprint was an overcorrection, and those prices are going to tick back up. Black market's going to tick probably to halfway where it was before it was reprinted and where it sunk when we got the initial printing. And I would say Felidar Sovereign will probably recover a little bit. Cards like Sol Ring always seem to shrug off reprints a little better than we expect, but it's mostly cooked, if only because we know that we're getting one in each deck, basically ad nauseum forever. Solemn Simulacrum, we're probably getting in one deck forever. Stuff like Thran Dynamo, they've expressed a willingness to reprint stuff like that. So that's why cards like Chromatic Lantern have grown so steadily, because they seem less willing to reprint those, and they haven't reprinted them for those two reasons. So the fact that all the decks are selling at about the same rate means there's no obvious one card, and so all the prices are going to... they're going to sort of add up to around MSRP, because there's no obvious terrible deck, and there's no obvious really good one. So that makes things a little easier to calculate than they were when you had, like, the Maranth deck, you know, that Naya one versus the Grixis one that sold like hotcakes. That basically forced Wizards to put two in a five-pack, two of that deck and then three random other ones, just because stores didn't want to buy a five-pack just to have one more Grixis deck to sell and then a bunch of Naya decks to sit on their shelves. It's like a restaurant running out of chocolate ice cream and the Gordon's Food Service makes them buy Neapolitan. They didn't like that.
When that Grixis deck hit, I didn't want to pay more than MSRP, so I made a deal with my LGS owner that he could have the true name Nemesis out of it in exchange for, I'll just take the rest off him for a little less than MSRP. But I didn't really care about that card that much. I don't think it's actually a great commander card.
It's really not. I don't. It may be no. In French, it's better, but I don't really like it. And
He was quite happy. He got an extra true name Nemesis. I got everything I wanted. Yoo-hoo!
Yeah, that's a good deal. Because that really wasn't a bad deck.
No.
Geneva was great.
Yeah.
Nekusar was such a fun commander that he made a bunch of old cards really spike. You know, stuff like Forced Fruition and Wheel and Deal and cards like that. They went up considerably, and it was 100% because of Nekusar. Like, I made a lot of money just saying, hey, Teferi's Puzzle Box hasn't gone anywhere in a while. Those are in bulk bins, and I made a lot on Puzzle Box. Even Winds of Change.
Yeah.
You know, with its multiple printings and its relatively uselessness elsewhere, Nekusar showed how much one popular commander can really move prices. So that was something pretty cool.
Is there a card that has been shooting up in price that hasn't been printed in these new C15 decks that you can directly, or in your opinion, attribute to these C15 decks? I've noticed Time Spiral has been going up in price.
Yeah, because of Mizzix. And Time Spiral, since it's on the reserve list, you're never getting another Time Spiral. So that's a real safe investment. No. Yeah, and Mizzix makes that really cheap to cast. I think a lot of foils, since foils can't be in a future commander deck, unless they change their reprint policy on those decks and start including foils, foils seem really safe. So stuff like Contagion Engine for the experience counters. Man, one that really spiked was Sage of Hours, because Sage of Hours is unfair with Azuri. Mm. You basically take every turn. Yeah. You take every turn until they can kill it. So there's... you know, there are quite a few cards. Basically, the entire series I write on MTG Price is, how are new commander cards going to make old cards spike? You know, and what's it going to do to prices? So there are a lot of examples in those articles, which are all free to read on MTG Price. But the cards, I think, from Commander 15 itself that have upside, I have three... examples I really like. The first is Shielded by Faith. I think that's one of the better auras we've seen for like a Bruna or like even like a Rois or something like that. Anybody that wants to make a Voltron deck, Shielded by Faith, I think, is a really good choice. Plus, you can play it early in the game and throw it on another creature until you play your commander. So, it impacts the whole game. It's an aura that you can basically cast with Abandon, and it's makes the creature hard to remove, so the aura is less likely to end up in the bin before you need it. So I like Shielded by Faith a lot, and it's like bulk right now. It's very cheap. Another card is Aether Snatch, it costs more than Desertion, Desertion was flirting with like $10 for a while. It's back down now. Aether Snatch costs one mana more, but what you get is the ability to commandeer a spell if you need to. It's the most flexible variant. Yeah, Aether Snatch is just nuts. It's a very good card, and it's worth like nothing. And I think I would be real surprised if that didn't hit at least $5 in the next little while. A card that I thought was going to take longer to hit $10 is Command Beacon. That's a card I really like. Command Beacon is very good. But I would say my third pick is probably Mizzix's Mastery.
That card's a house.
Yeah, and I think that's legacy playable. So it sort of fights with Past and Flames for that spot, but Mizzix's Mastery is too cheap right now, and it's very good.
What's your top pick for the new legendary creatures?
Finance-wise?
Finance-wise, and then, like, most fun to play.
I'm not really sure finance-wise, because, like, it seems like there's two tiers. There's the experience counter tier, and that it seems like across the board everyone's building primarily with the experience counter cards. I've seen a few Cassetto decks and a few Mazurek decks, but like Anya and Arjun are pretty much trash. I thought that was interesting. Like they'll be in the 99 in a few decks, but like I don't want to build around either of those cards.
Arjun is very good in Niv-Mizzix.
Oh yeah.
Arjun's very good in Niv-Mizzix.
I like him in the 99. It seems like if you want him as your commander, he doesn't really do enough to justify not just building the Mizzix deck. I would say Daxos is the most fun, honestly. I really like Daxos a lot. I was most excited about Azuri initially, but man, I never considered myself an Orzhov guy, but I'm looking at a lot of the decks I'm building lately, and there's a lot of Orzhov stuff I really like. And it's not just out of this set either, because I'm really excited about another Orzhov card that's coming soon, which is the Aili Eternal Pilgrim, which is core cleric. So we have a legendary core cleric. So I don't know if core in that sentence is as important as cleric, but having a legendary cleric in black and white is amazing. And all those cards from, you know, like Scourge era, I'm not sure which sets exactly had those black-white clerics, but all of a sudden you can jam those in a deck. That's going to be very good. And some of those, like Twilight, the land, whatever the cleric land is and stuff like that, I think that's all got upside.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm most excited about Daxos as a build-around. I think he's almost single-handedly going to be able to make Sarah's Sanctum move in price.
Yep.
But it seems like everyone's building with Marin and Mizzix this week. If you go to EDH Rec, it tells you like what the more popular commanders of the week is. 26 people built Marin decks this week, and 21 people built Azuri decks. And last week everyone was building with Daxos, but I think more people are moving on to Karlov this week than Daxos. So, yeah.
I jumped on Karlov as soon as the sets got released and have brewed a pretty nasty, dirty Karlov deck.
Yeah, he has.
It's good.
It's horrible.
Yeah, I mean, gaining life in EDH, if you can do it, like, consistently.
Yeah, it's a bit mean. It runs stuff like Hatred and Zuran Orb to sort of get, you've got to block Daxos or you're dead type effects, and then tries to get lifelink onto Crypt Rats, Pestilence Demon, that sort of stuff, just to make Karlov go nuts.
Yeah, Karlov.
That's why Boon Reflection's so expensive. Boon Reflection was, for a while, was one of the cheapest ones, just because everyone's like, yeah, once again, life. But yeah, there you go. Alora changed a lot of things. Like, Alora was sort of a variant on that Fireman Angel that you could gain life even if it was in the graveyard, which was a new concept for Magic. And Alora being so non-interactive that, like, you can't stop that command zone damage, and you can't even tuck Alora now. If they make the mistake of summoning him, you can't even get rid of it that way, because there's no way to tuck him. They'll put him back in the command zone. So I think a lot of cards from Alora decks are worth looking at again in Karlov decks. But I mean, Azuri, obviously.
Yeah, people are still making Alora decks.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, he's still number one.
They got new goodies.
I think if you're a new commander player, Alora is very appealing, because you're probably unaware that life gain as a sort of a thing on its own isn't that good. You need to be doing something with that life. But then he has that bit where he lets you, you know, have access to cards and things. He's in very popular colors. He ticks all the boxes for, yeah, I want to get into Commander, let's do this. And I think that's where his appeal lies. He's the Space Marines of Commanders.
Even old players find some fun with him, because then they start exploring all the things you can do with life gain and all the ways you can abuse it.
Yeah.
Such as you have done.
Well, I've done that with Karlov rather than Alora, but yes.
Yes. That ability to exile opponent's creatures, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's a nice distinction between him and Alora. So one of our listeners, at Robin_Koss on Twitter, he's the one who asked about the favorite legend from C15. And it's interesting to hear that it's the new Daxos. And this one may have some impact. Oh, we didn't cover it in the news section, but maybe we'll cover it now. This one may have some relevance to your immediate future. Charles Moreau, at Charles_Moore from Twitter, he writes, which white card would you compare the most to disposable diapers and reusable diapers?
I feel like there's a pun I'm missing. like I should, I don't know. This is a diaper finance from Brainstorm Brewery question, because a lot of us are syncing up our child having schedules. 2016 is going to be the year of Brainstorm Brewery children, I think. We had the debate cloth versus disposable on Twitter and on the podcast. I'm not sure which white card I compare to. I'm sure there's a really good pun, and if I like spent an hour looking at card names, I could have come up with it.
Cue Nate.
Well, thematically, there's crib swap.
That's true.
Since it implies there's some infants, and I think there's one swaddled in some kind of white cloth in the
picture. So they're in the crib, and you're swapping diapers. That could work.
Is it the difference between Aura of Silence and Act of Authority? One of them's reusable. One of them's not.
There are a lot of good diaper puns in other colors. Bubbling Muck and Shard Volley. And
is it your first child?
Yes. First and hopefully last.
You will be praying for an Aura of Silence. So, yes, and you will achieve it by getting an Act of Authority and putting it in play. But
we are getting a diaper genie, but unfortunately it's not a djinn of wishes. It just takes care of diapers. But honestly, if I had three wishes, like not having to smell diapers in my house would be one of them, probably. So thanks, diaper genie.
If you do it right, you won't smell them for very long.
Yeah, no, he's not wrong.
Yeah. Let's take the time now to congratulate Jason on his future fatherhood. This is a wonderful moment. Just before Jason's entire life comes crashing down around him, and then he rebuilds it around the child.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to keep cards out of baby mouths. That's going to be tough.
That is going
to
be tough.
I have some pictures which I will send to you as cautionary tales. Trust me. Where he's picked up a pile of cards, chewed on them. Luckily, he's chewed the basic mountains and left the Wheel of Fortune that was next to the basic mountain alone. It's like, oh jeez, let me just take that. And that's that's not even the most expensive by a long way chomp he could have made. He nearly got snapcaster mage out of a deck once. Luckily, It was double-sleeved, so no drool got on that.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. Yet another reason to double-sleeve your cards, ladies and gentlemen. And specifically, I'm talking to Josh Lee Kwai. Josh, double-sleeve your damn cards, please. Please.
He'll learn the hard way.
Oh, yeah.
So, do you know if you're having a male or a female spawn?
Well, it's not going to be a Ferengi. It's going to be a human, so I'm having a daughter.
Hey! Do you have a name, or am I prying too much?
Funny story. Okay, so as a joke, I was giving my wife a bunch of names of female characters from stuff I liked. I was like, "Hey, what about Kale, the angel from League of Legends?" She's like, "No, I don't like Kale as a name. It's a boy's name anyway." I'm like, "Oh, all right. What about Liliana?" And she's like, "Oh, I like that name." And I can't talk her out of it. And which is fine. Liliana's a great character in Magic. It's a good name. You can give her all sorts of nicknames. You can shorten that to Lily or Lil or, you know, Anna even. The problem is every nerd named their daughter Liliana. You know, that's like it's a very basic Magic nerd name for a daughter now. And, so I thought, you know, that's kind of basic. I almost don't want to do that, but I can't talk my wife out of it. She loved the name so much, so like that's the name we've got picked out now. So it was a joke that backfired.
I actually know a Magic player at my LGS who has a son and a daughter called Jace and Liliana. I get you not. And I think Elspeth is a pretty name for a girl.
It really is. It's a beautiful name.
I don't know. It just sounds like I don't want her to be too. I don't want to like raise Brienne of Tarth, you know. So
wife is partial to the name Lily. By the way, she would have named our daughter Lily. I forget why we didn't. But yeah, she loves the name Lily. So Liliana will be a favorite among what is it? Commander at MTG Podcast wives.
Yeah. So there you go. That's the story. So I'm not trying too hard to talk her out of it because I do like the name. I just don't like how basic it is. But you know, that's at the end of the day, it's gonna be fine. I think she might not even ever find out she's named after a Magic card until she's old enough to forgive me for it, I guess.
Well, at least she's named after an expensive Magic card if her middle name is Of the Veil. You can hyphenate Of the Veil, obviously, to make it one name.
Yeah, yeah. What I like is that Jason has just identified that there are basic names, which implies there are non-basic names.
Yeah, absolutely. I was hoping for a mythic name, but I'll go with basic, I guess.
Well, Liliana is by definition a mythic name, no?
That's true.
Yeah, yeah.
I tried to have my son named Hendrix, but she wasn't having any of that.
Would his middle name have been James?
I think it would have been Voodoo Child. Hendrix, oh, Voodoo, yeah. Child Watson.
Yeah, clearly named after Christina Hendrix.
Yes, obviously.
Right.
Everyone's favorite large-busted red-headed lady. Anyway, what's this game Magic I've heard so much people talking about?
Yeah, so... now we're like, I don't know how long we're in. This might be another double header with Jason Ault.
I'm worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And so topic two, which is oh my goodness, how long are we in? Like 50 minutes in. Topic two, main topic number two is our value white cards. And so Nate is going to set it up. And before we do that, I thought I would just point out, like, of course, if we're doing a value series, we should have Jason on to talk about cards he believes are valuable, kind of undervalued, if you will. So, Nate, why don't you talk about how we're going to do this and what we're doing with staples?
Value white staples. So I pulled out a bunch of cards that we've already talked about. And in deference to our guest, I've listed the cent pence by mtgprice.com. And there's a range from the buy now button. And then there's a higher range of what the general median or average is. So first up, we've talked about Mirror Entity, creature shapeshifter, and he turns into anything and pumps your stuff. He's about 78 to $1.25 right now. Return to Dust is an instant that gets rid of your opponent's stuff. It's 38 cents to 63 cents. Cathar's Crusade is an enchantment that puts counters on all your creatures, 65 cents to 97 cents.
Everybody playing white should have a Cathar's Crusade in their deck unless they're doing a creature-less deck.
And we should note that the reason it's so cheap is because of a recent reprinting. It was pretty pricey before that happened, with good reason.
I run Return to Dust in every single white deck I've ever built. Why, we're looking at things that should be in every deck. Return to Dust is the premium instant speed disenchant in our format.
Yeah, and so basically what we're saying is every one of these cards we've listed plus two more should probably go in every white deck. So, sorry, carry on, Nate. We're sorry we interrupted. We just couldn't help ourselves.
No, that's cool. Next up is Blind Obedience. It's an enchantment that lets you extort from everybody and makes everyone else's creatures tapped. It's about $1.75 to 98 cents. And last episode, I talked about Cami of False Hope. It's the white version of Spore Frog. And that one's pennies. It's just 14 to 21 cents.
Yeah, we discussed Spore Frog at some
Spore length. Frog's the one from
Prophecy?
Prophecy, the terrible Prophecy. Set, yeah.
Which had Rhystic Study, the best common, in it. Yeah, other than that, it was pretty poor. And now Spore Frog.
So those five are the cards that we've talked about a bunch. So, Jason, you can go ahead and...
Well, I wasn't sure if it was contains white or is mono white. So I have two lists here, if you guys would indulge me. Because I looked at these with respect to, I'd say, the ratio between their current price and their usefulness. Which means they've probably got some upside. Now, Ashen Rider is a card that I think is way too cheap. It shouldn't be under $2. And you said keep them under $1, and I kept them under £1, because I'm a cheater. So something's like $1.30 or something like that. But whatever, it's under £1. I win. Ashen Rider? About £1. That's too cheap. That for what it does, it's very good. Being able to trigger when it leaves play and when it enters play, that's nutty. Ashen Rider's... And the mana cost doesn't matter in our format. You know, it's almost trivial. Like, by the time you have the mana for it, you've got a good target for it. The reason that it didn't impact Standard as much is, I don't know, outside of Reanimator, the game was going to go too long for that to really matter sometimes. Merciless Eviction is a card that... The problem is there's no reason they can't just reprint it, but I think it's very useful. I see Merciless Eviction used a lot, and you can, if you have all enchantments, you can just nuke creatures or something like that. So again, like under $2, Merciless Eviction's too cheap. I think it's got real upside. Assemble the Legion is another card that, for as good as it is, I can't see it not going up in the years to come. Everyone, you know, complains that Boros, there's only one way to build it. Okay, well, here's a staple that goes in every Boros deck. And, oh, by the way, Assemble the Legion's very good with Cathar's... No, Cathar's Crusade's non-token. But it's good with a lot of the stuff that pumps your whole army and those sort of things.
Pause you there. Cathar's Crusade is not non-token.
It's not non-token? Are we sure about
that? No. Whenever a creature enters the battlefield under your control...
Any creature.
Plus one counter.
Well, that's not fair.
Trust me.
Okay, then.
It is not non-token. It is disgusting.
Ugh. Okay, Assemble the Legion and Cathar's Crusade, then. That's dumb.
Oh, that's only the tip of the dumb iceberg that you can do with Cathar's Crusade.
All right, let's start that whole segment over so I sound smarter. No, Dueling Grounds was my fourth pick. I like Dueling Grounds a lot, and I think it's too cheap. It's it basically rewards you for having big, dumb green creatures. You know, and anything that, like, limits the amount they can attack you with is great. You know? Like, crawl space and stuff like that. Anything that that keeps them from just swinging at you with a huge horde when you're unprepared. This kind of narrows the it evens the playing field if they've got a big army and you've got, like, a few fatties. I like Dueling Grounds a lot. And the last one is Growing Ranks, which, you know, Parallel Lives was the obvious sort of Selesnya card from around that time, but Growing Ranks, I think, being able to populate every turn, there are there are definitely times when making a copy of something, especially if you got like a Trostani deck, you know. I like growing ranks a lot, and I think it's, you know, it being practically bulk, it's way too cheap.
So Ashen Road is an interesting pick there. I've had arguments with people who are running Angel of Despair, but not Ashen Rider. When I've said, why don't you swap out the Angel for an Ashen Rider? And they've said, no, the extra mana makes the Angel better. It's categorically a worse card.
Well, yeah, I mean, you have to pay its mana cost. You can't just cheat it in with that Angel Cleric.
Yeah. So
Kalia the Vast, yeah, you can't just cheat into play. I do have 5 mono white picks also. I agreed with you guys on Cathar's Crusade, that's much too cheap. But again, we know that it's cheap because of a reprint, so I think it'll probably rebound pretty significantly. I think there's a lot of upside in Cathar's Crusade. And it's dumber than I thought it was before we started this podcast. And thinking back, I must have gotten confused temporarily because I've seen it played in token decks before, and I don't know. I thought, no, there's no way it's that dumb. But yeah, I guess it is.
It's hilarious when someone has it in play and they cast Stormherd. Really funny. Here's 41 Flying Pegasi.
Yeah, it's brutal. Absolutely brutal. And as a reminder to those of us, those of our listeners who may not be familiar with Cathar's Crusade, when you dump a bunch of creatures onto the battlefield at one time, they all see each other, so they all get counters for each other. It's lovely.
Correct.
Yes.
That's sheer insanity. sheer insanity with the Cathar's Crusade. Third one is Blazing Archon. Now, that was printed in the Graveborn or whatever precon as a foil, and that foil is pretty cheap. And the regular Blazing Archon is also pretty cheap, but even with having multiple printings, there's no reason for that not to go up, because Archon's just like, it's a shoo-in in mail decks and stuff like that. I really like Blazing Archon a lot. And again, anything that limits the amount you can get attacked with is obviously a good card. That's something they have to deal with. Amiria Shepherd is a card I'm seeing in a ton of decks, and because it's so new, it's bulk, but the foil's not that much more expensive than the non-foil. This is the time to buy those foil Amiria Shepherds, I think.
I bet that looks beautiful in foil as well.
I'm seeing these in so many decks.
That must look beautiful in
foil. I don't know the foil price off the top of my head. I haven't looked in a week or two, but you know, if we're not seeing like a 10x multiplier, then I think it's probably a good buy. Oh, yeah, it's $5, which I think is pretty cheap. You know, and that's actually
down.
Which
is a 10x multiplier on that one.
Yeah, well, if you can get the non-foil for 50 cents, like most sites are going to sell them for $1. So, you know, if you can get them for 50 cents somewhere, fine. But, like, you know, it's basically a bulk rare. So having a 5x or a $5 foil on a bulk rare is pretty telling, because it means EDH players have identified this as a card we want. And having that landfall ability means they might not just jam it in any commander deck, because they don't tend to have a ton of keyword abilities in the commander decks. They try to keep it a little more simpler than that. Like, I know there was a Living Weapon card and they just wrote the reminder text, but as a rule, they don't tend to have a million different keyword abilities in the commander set, so this is a little less reprintable, you know, than most cards. So I like this foil a lot at $5. And Amiri Shepherd's just, it's so good what it does.
Yeah, that's the pre-release available for $5. The normal foils are actually about $3.50, so totally worth it, huh?
Yeah, absolutely.
Nice.
I haven't really... Everyone's like, what's the difference between the pre-release stamped ones and the non-pre-release? For the stuff that's, you know, any rare is available that way, which is relatively recent, there's not enough data to say if there's an effect. So it's really hard to say which is better long-term. Because people are conditioned to think those pre-release foils are junk. You know, because they just gave so many of them out that it was more comparable to the non-foil price than it was to the foil price in previous cards. Anything that's not like $15 and up. So like Worm Coil Engine and Emrakul bucked that trend, but everything else, the pre-release foil was more similar to the price of the non-foil. So we're not seeing that exactly here.
The pre-release foil shield red I bought recently was cheaper than a regular New Phyrexia one.
Yeah.
I actually got it a pound cheaper.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Mm.
But for anything more expensive, it tends to be... It tends to... Well, the difference tends to not be as much. But like a yeah. set foil Emrakul is just, you know, ridiculous. Just because of Legacy.
Mm.
So, it's... It diverges a bit, but still, you know, not enough to matter, even in the expensive ones. I think I don't really know if going forward we're going to see a divergence in the price, between like a set foil and a pre-release stamped foil. I've seen as many people say they hate it as say they like it, so it's hard to know. But if you can get the pre-release set foils for that much cheaper, then that it's probably worth doing. I really think Amiri Shepherd's got upside going forward. It's a very good card.
Yeah. Many EDH players that I've run into, at least, that, you know, they kind of eschew the foils in their personal decks. I know everybody, you know, knows that one guy or three or four who bling out their decks with all foils, but most EDH players just don't care because we're building so many 100-card decks. We don't want to buy all foils all the time. Again,
and some people
there
have
exceptions.
That one pet deck, too. They've got all the other decks, but they just, you know, one foil at a time here and there in trades, or they'll, like, buy one card per paycheck or whatever and just slowly try to foil out their pet deck. But that's a good thing about EDH. Like, there's not, like, a real rotation. Sometimes you'll get new cards and you'll have to cut one card, but you're not going to lose a whole 100-card deck to rotation in EDH, and that's why it makes more sense to foil outside of standard, because the stuff you want to play, you can play forever if you want.
Yeah.
The last card I want to talk about is not available in foil because it is from Exodus. And it is Reconnaissance. Reconnaissance is an enchantment that allows you to do takesies backsies. Basically, any commander you have that triggers, or any like creature you have that triggers when you attack with it, you then use Reconnaissance for zero mana to pull it back out of combat. So you get that trigger, but you don't have to have the creature committed to going to its death. Which is great in stuff like, like Geist of St. Traft, or maybe even like Narset, or, you know.
Like Kalia and Alicia?
Kalia, yeah. Yeah.
Right. Those of our listeners familiar with some of the Gust Cloak creatures, this basically gives Gust Cloak to all of those creatures. It's also... basically a Maze of Ith in white enchantment form.
Well, it's for your creatures.
It's only for your creatures.
Well, yeah. Yes, qualified basically.
it means people can't play... I know they're not very popular in our format, but it means people can't really play combat tricks against you, because if they combat trick to block better, you can just say, okay, you've wasted your combat tricks now, I'm going to remove myself from combat.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah. I looked at buying one of these for an Alicia deck recently, actually, because I didn't have one.
Nate, does your Alicia deck run Reconnaissance? I know that I've playtested against it recently.
No, it doesn't.
Who was it? Somebody was playing Reconnaissance to great annoyance. Well, Jason, those are excellent cards, and I'm glad that you went off-white, as it were. That's something we haven't done, but it really... I realized what I was about to say. I was going to say it really added color to this segment. Ba-doom-tsh.
Hey!
Thanks. I'll be here all
tonight,
week.
Philip.
I can't even be mad at puns anymore. I'm about to be a dad, and I'm gonna have to make stupid dad jokes all the time. So,
yeah,
I can't
you
just
are.
Dismiss something for being a pun now. Now I gotta judge puns on their merits, and that one wasn't too bad, I guess.
So you've done 200 stand-up appearances this year, correct?
211.
And I think 211 so far this year, and the year's not over, folks. It's not too late to catch your own Jason Alt show. I'm available for announcer gigs, Jason, if you need an announcer.
Excellent.
You can Skype me in.
Who better to bring me to the stage than someone who lives in California?
Apparently Nate, but he lives in California too. But with yeah, but Nate has a voice unlike any other heard in podcasting.
That's true, but I could introduce Jason with a sort of indignance and distrustfulness that only years of being English can bring to a man.
That's true, and an arrogance that would befit both you and the host of Brainstar Brewery.
Welcome, I guess, to the stage, Jason Alt. Jason, put your hands together. Clap!
Got him.
And as we all know, that's Jason, J-A-S-O-U-N.
Yeah.
Jasoon.
All right, that's a lot of teasing for one little interstitial here.
He made us wait for him. He deserves it. Be on time next time.
Yeah, damn it. Make those trains go faster.
I blame a crippled infrastructure of transport in my country.
Haven't you described yourself as the British Mussolini before?
No, I aspire to be the British Mussolini. It's different. Not quite done it yet.
And as a tangent to our tangent, Sean was away this weekend because it's your birthday weekend. Happy birthday, Sean.
Why, thank you. 1 year closer to death, and I am celebrating the fact that I am now officially older than Jesus. That makes me better, doesn't it? Better than Jesus.
But not the EDH Jesus.
EDH Jesus?
I guess he missed that reference.
Yeah, he wasn't here for that. No, Jason Alt, to call back the very beginning of the show, Jason Alt was called the EDH Jesus for telling everybody to be nice and then being crucified for it.
Look, I'm not really saying that I am Jesus. That's for you guys to decide. But moving along.
The last time a guy with that accent compared himself to Jesus, it was John Lennon, and we all saw how that turned out.
At about this age.
Nothing bad happened.
I don't think ever bad ever happens. Yep.
It's a well-known fact that all Christians are reasonable people full of forgiveness. Anyway, Nate, you had some white picks, please.
Yeah, I do. Okay, I'll start off with my mono white value white picks. So first up is War Priest of Thune for one and a white human cleric. It's a 2/2. When War Priest of Thune enters the battlefield, you may destroy target enchantment. So he's almost a reclamation sage, and he's 19 to 24 cents.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, Unquestioned Authority. 2 and a white, enchantment aura. When Unquestioned Authority enters the battlefield, draw a card. That's cool. Enchanted creature has protection from creatures, and that's the white way of saying unblockable. And that's 19 to 31 cents.
Yeah, that's a wonderful card.
Next up, Reciprocate. For just a single white, instant, exile target creature that dealt damage to you this turn. So if you want another Swords to Plowshares and Path to Exile and don't want to pay more than a dollar, and you're willing to take one hit, then you can add Reciprocate. And the next one is mainly here for Phil. Morningtide, 1 and a white, sorcery. Remove all cards and all graveyards from the game. And that's only 34 to 38 cents.
This is why I have a category in all of my decks called Nate Hate.
Mm-hmm.
You go for my graveyard all the time. It makes me very frustrated and ill, too.
Yay.
The first two cards you listed there, Nate, the War Priest and the Unquestioned Authority are excellent in any flicker deck, because the Unquestioned Authority, you keep flickering the aura and redrawing cards. And the War Priest, you flicker him and get to keep destroying enchantments.
Cool beans.
But yeah.
Entering the battlefield effects.
It becomes a card drawer engine.
But I notice you've been playing a lot of Alicia recently with allies, right? You've been playing a lot of Mardu allies.
Oh, yeah. As an honorable mention, I'm going to give the category of BFZ allies. They're very inexpensive at the moment. So if you've wanted to make an ally tribal with white, you can pick up a good chunk of your deck right now for cheap. And Alicia Who Smiles at Death with Mardu ally tribals, there's a lot of recent good ones. She smiles at Enter the Battlefield rally effects.
Alicia Who Smiles at Enter the Battlefield rally effects. That may have been a little too long for the card name. I see why they went with At Death.
punchy title.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, those are all excellent cards, Nate, except for Morning Tide. I kind of wish Morning Tide had never been printed.
The card or the set?
I was thinking mainly of the card because it will vex me.
All right, so we got another hour of recording left with Jason, so we're going to take a break there, and I will leave Morning Tide as our message of the week for Phil. You can reach us by going to our website at commanderandmtg.com. Our email is cast@commanderandmtg.com. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, mtgcast.com, pabe.fm, and Reddit by searching for Commander and MTG Podcast. So check us out next time for the second half. We are Commander and...
Hear me clicking my mouse, why I idly flick between things. Waiting for Phil to bring me into the conversation. I presume he's talking to somebody else. But now he's gonna say to the listeners, here's Sean from his birthday holiday. Bring me in, yeah, bring me in, yeah.